Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Blitz here on Blog Talk Radio and on UltimateSportsTalk.com. It's our football college playoff focus show, plus other cool things that are happening in Spain, Mexico, and Australia in the women's gridiron scene. I'm your host for this evening, Nkeshi Free, and you can follow me on Twitter at Keshi's Cuties. That's K-E-S-H-I-S-C-U-T-I-E-S. To chat football and use our hashtag, NoJokeFootball. Reminder, our No Joke Football huddle is sponsored by Zazzle.com. And today, in a couple of minutes on GridironGirl.org, the founder for that fabulous site, Nicole Brown, will be joining us to talk college football and bracket positions. Once again today, I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, Eric Brown. His Twitter handle is Fit for Life, F-I-T-F-O-R, L-Y-F-E, and Erica Lynn Anderson at PatsFangirl12. Hey, guys, how are you doing this weekend?
Hey, thanks for having us.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Is everybody on?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now. Great.
Okay.
Man, this has been a crazy weekend.
Yes, it has.
I'm wonderful. Well, I am so excited. Yeah, I can hear you now. I'm so excited that everyone's here. And I know this is the weekend that we have all been waiting for. The official college rankings are out, and we now know who's in the top four. So what do you guys think about this weekend? Were you happy with the results? And Erica, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I think – you know, they got it pretty right. The big question there was who was going to get the number four spot. You know, they were debating between Baylor, TCU, and Ohio State. Because I don't think there was a big 12 playoff game or championship game, and Baylor beat TCU, and so there was kind of a huge question mark there. And with Ohio State's win yesterday 59-0 in their championship game, I think it really clinched that spot for them and really showed the voters, if you will, that that they kind of deserve that spot. I have my questions about whether Florida State deserves to be in there. I know they're 12-0, but it's a weak schedule, and they have squeaked by many, many a time. But, you know, it's set the way it is. And I'm excited to see the game against Oregon and FSU for sure.
And, Eric, what about you? What do you think? Are you happy with the results from this weekend?
Yeah, I think overall they got it right. The question for me was who was going to be in at number four. And I was listening to the head of the committee's explanation as far as why they put Ohio State in. And a big key from that was they felt that Ohio State's non-conference schedule was tougher than Baylor's. So that was one of the things that they took into consideration. So, I think overall, I'm pretty happy about it. So I'm just interested to, you know, get into the matchups and see, you know, who matches up best with who. And as an old referee, boxing referee, Mills Lane used to say, let's get it on. Let's see what's happening.
Okay, great. Well, listen, Nicole, I know that you have some thoughts about the schedule, and we'll get to your thoughts in just a second. I have to pay some bills. So we want to bring our guests into the No Joke Football Huddle, again brought to you by Zazzle.com. Go to Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties and hurry, get 15% off on every item. Use the code HOLIDAYSMADE for discounts now through December 23rd. So again, everyone, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Nicole Brown is our guest today, and she is the founder of GridironGirl.org, and you can follow her at her hashtag on Twitter at OUGridironGirl on Twitter. So hello, Nicole. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about college football. I mean, obviously, as if people don't know, I'm a giant Oregon fan, so seeing them in the top four was obviously pretty expected after the Pac-12 title game, but nonetheless, you never know what can happen in there. So I was happy to see them in the mix and thrilled that both are playing Florida State.
Okay, great.
So, yeah, well, I mean, honestly, just like – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously, like everyone, there was, you know, the big question with number four. You know, I was probably wishful thinking, but part of me wanted to see Florida State out. You know, but that being said, despite their undefeated season, the reality is they haven't had very many big wins. In fact, I think only three of the teams that they have beaten are still in the top 25, and even then none of them are in the top 10. And you know, on top of that, they haven't been very, you know, very big wins. And so, you know, obviously they get to be in because they're undefeated. And, you know, my mindset last night thinking about, you know, when I was predicting my top four, I really didn't feel like they necessarily deserved to be in, especially in light of TCU and Baylor's, you know, being in the fight with LSU. But after that being said, I just actually finished up a teleconference with Coach Jimbo Fisher and with Mark Telfrich, the coach at Oregon, and, you know, hearing their thoughts on it kind of, you know, made me softened me a little bit towards Florida State. And the biggest issue is just, you know, the big issue that they pointed out is just how difficult it is to win 29 games in a row. I mean, obviously that should go without saying, but you know, they were able to kind of put that in perspective. So despite the winning by 2 points against, you know, not so stellar teams and different things like that, you know, they pointed out how difficult it is to do that week in and week out with everyone bringing their best shot. So I guess in that regard, at this point, having heard their thoughts, I do agree with them being at three, or maybe would have put them at four. But, you know, I think given the fact that they're undefeated, you know, it makes sense. And I definitely agree with Ohio State being in the top four. I mean, they, you know, played a much tougher conference. You know, I think it was a little bit of a stunner to see them in there for a lot of people. But if you really break down the wins that they had versus Baylor and TCU's wins in the conference that they play in, you know, I think they get the nod. I think, you know, they beat three teams that are still in the top 25 plus, you know, a conference championship game. So, oh no, I take that back. No, they did. Yeah, they had a conference championship game, whereas TCU and Baylor didn't. And so, you know, I think it was a fair assessment. What doesn't make sense to me is how the committee put TCU at three last week, and then moved them back to six. I don't know that they even should have been at three last week. But
that was a huge drop for everybody, I think. Well, and I think that would be a huge drop for everybody. And I think that definitely has been one of the questions that everyone's been asking this weekend in terms of, you know, not only did they drop, but that is a significant drop to go from three to six. But what we want to definitely talk about today while we have you on the show, again, is, you know, definitely getting your take on college football. But, you know, and also give you a chance to talk about Gridiron Girl and what you guys are up to. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open the floor up to my co-host and see if they have any questions for you. Eric, would you like to go ahead and start? Do you have any questions for Nicole?
Yeah, I was thinking, obviously we've got, you know, a four-team playoff going, and there's a lot of, I guess, you know, national surprise / disappointment with either who's number four or who's just in it in general. I'm kind of in favor of maybe next year opening up to eight teams. Now, I don't know, you know, how they'd be able to work that out, you know, schedule-wise, but I was wondering if you might have had any thoughts on that or if you're, you know, pretty happy with a four-team playoff.
You know, I think four is better than what has been, but you're right. There, especially in light of seeing what happened this morning with, you know, two really solid teams getting left out of the mix, I do think it makes more sense to move towards an NFL-type model. You're right, there's a lot of logistics in there, and, you know, obviously with the bowl games, and, I mean, it's going to take a while before that happens, I think. I mean, look how long it took them to get to a four team. So I definitely think it needs to expand, but I think it's better than the BCS, you know, what we did have. So, yeah, I'm in favor of it expanding, you know, because too many solid teams are going to get left out, but I do think it's better than what we had. And
okay,
I think,
great.
You know, having talked with a lot of former players, too, you know, and well, current players, they agree with that, too. And, you know, obviously the current coaches won't come right out and say that most of the time. But the sense that I kind of get, at least here in Oregon, is that, you know, this isn't necessarily ideal. It's just better than what we had. So.
Wonderful. Erica, do you have any questions for Nicole on her thoughts on the system? I mean, we know how that you guys are kind of all in agreement about the whole Florida State and, you know, the whole back and forth, should they be there, should they not be there, and definitely Ohio State being in with that phenomenal win yesterday, that was just absolutely incredible. But, Erica, do you have any additional questions for Nicole?
Well, I just wanted to say one thing. You guys were talking about the TCU thing. I was watching the panel today, and Kirk Herbstreit said that the thing with the panel is that they don't – it's not like an AP-style poll with the College Football Playoff Board, that every week they reevaluate completely. Like, they don't really take last week's ranking into account. Like, TCU was at 3 last week, but they completely reevaluate. Like, TCU wasn't a shoe-in just because they were ranked. And so they looked at the fact that they didn't play a conference championship game, the fact that they, you know, got beat by Baylor this year, and then they had to take into account Ohio State's huge win in their conference championship. And so that was the huge reason for the drop for TCU from 3 to 6, is it was just a complete reevaluation of 1 through 4. And, you know, from what I understood, it was there was no team that was a shoe-in. And so that was kind of, because one of the men on the board was like, I don't get it. What is the deal with this? And that's basically what Kirk Herbstreit said that the panel had described. So,
well, and keep in mind, too, last week, I'm sure Erica knows this, too, but one of the big factors, you know, that was unsaid last week is that, you know, Ohio State had lost their starting quarterback next. So I think that's part of why they weren't in part of the bigger discussion last week, because I think, you know, although the committee probably wouldn't say that, there were probably some that were waiting to see how they would bounce back this week, not having their starting, you know, amazing quarterback. And so I think there may have been some, like, reservations in putting them higher up, not knowing what's going to happen. And obviously, they came out and answered good questions yesterday, so probably led to committee members being more willing to put them up.
Yeah, because I'm
well, Nicole, I'm glad.
Now, so.
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because that's what I was going to say, was that what is, you know, that's a big conversation, you know, that everyone's been having, is that Ohio State deserves to be in because of all of the quarterback issues. So how is that really and truly a factor? And, of course, I'm sorry, Eric and Erica both know that I don't follow college football, so I really and truly lean to them for their understanding. I keep up with it because I have to be able to converse with these two fabulous and very well-knowledged and versed co-hosts of mine. But, you know, my passion really and truly is more on the professional level. So can you explain to me and for those other listeners out there like me who don't know the situation with Ohio State and the three quarterbacks?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't remember how the first one went down, but he was hurt, because there's been talk about announced him coming to Oregon, although I think that's rumored. But anyway, they were playing this year. I think they started the year with, is it DJ Barrett? Is it TJ Barrett? Is that right, Erica?
I think so.
Yeah. I want to say it's Barrett, but anyway. Well. Right. Mm-hmm. So the second, but he was, I mean, already in the Heisman discussion and everything else, he was really leading the team to big things. You know, they were in hunt, and I think they only lost one game this season. So, but regardless, he was, he got hurt. I mean, a season-ending injury either last week or the week before. And so, you know, I think, I don't know that it should have been a factor, but it probably was because, of course, you know, it's about money and everything else. So they don't want to put him in. I could see the committee without saying it, maybe thinking, like, do we want to put an Ohio State in, you know, in a big game when they may not? I mean, they may just totally crumble with third-string quarterback. You know, I don't know that that's something they can legitimately factor in. I know that they can factor in injuries, like in terms of, say, for example, one of the big factors in the Oregon loss to Arizona earlier in the year, and that was the only loss that they had. But it appears that the committee has been forgiving that loss because at the time, Oregon was playing with several of their linemen out. I mean, in fact, I think only one scholarship O-lineman was playing in that game. And so what it caused was a bunch of sacks. You know, Marcus Mariota was sacked a bazillion times that game, more so than any other, you know, that he had, more sacks than he'd had all year, basically. And so it was obvious that we were having an offensive line issue. And so in the new college, in the selection committee criteria, they have written in some leeway around, you know, factoring in losses due to injury. And so I know it can affect that way, but I don't know that they can sort of project, I hope I'm making sense, but I don't know if they can, you know, sort of fault a team and not put them high or up, given that they might be down because they lost a quarterback. I don't know if that makes sense, but I know that they can consider it in terms of losses. I don't know that they could project what it might look like because somebody lost a star quarterback, for example.
The first string that got injured was Braxton Miller, and then JT Barrett took over for him, and he broke his ankle last week. And so then Cardale Jones, is the one that played yesterday against Wisconsin. So, I have a question for Nicole. So, obviously, you know, for those of you out there that aren't familiar with Gridiron Girl, we have an Alabama writer, and Nicole's the Oregon writer. So, as a little backstory, the big thing the past couple of years has been that Oregon wants to play Alabama. It has not worked out with the ranking system and different things, but this year looks like the best chance at having an Oregon-Alabama matchup. In order for that to happen, Alabama and Oregon obviously have to win the first round of the playoffs to get to Arlington. So my question, Nicole, is based on, you know, probably know Alabama well, what do you think, let's fast forward and say you guys both win, what do you think about that matchup? Kind of what are the keys you're looking at? How Mariota kind of you know, the O-line, how they can perform. Obviously, against Arizona, they performed phenomenally. How they can perform against Alabama's defense and kind of the pressure there that, you know, that's on that Oregon team. I don't know. Has Mariota been to a national championship yet? He hasn't.
No, he hasn't. This would be the first, yeah.
Okay. So,
you know, here's the deal. I mean, Erica, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead.
Well, that's the big question. I think why everybody wants to see, especially around here, from what I understand, Alabama and Alabama country too, they are wanting the matchup with Oregon. And I think it just really goes to, you know, I think everybody wants to see how, you know, West Coast sort of spread offense would work against Alabama and the big guys. And, you know, last year, maybe even the year before, I would say, you know, Alabama would, you know, just kill Oregon because historically, Oregon has, well, with the spread offense we've had the past several years, we've really struggled against big powerhouse teams like Stanford and, like, you know, I'm trying to think of another one, but at least Stanford has been kind of the mold everybody's looked to as kind of being the power, power line, and, you know, the big husky guys, you know, and not necessarily as fast. And they had dominated us for a couple of years. And so I think it made everybody question, like, could Oregon handle somebody like Alabama, you know, or teams in the SEC? And Auburn was another one Oregon lost to in the national championship in 2010, but or 2011, I should say. But anyway, so I do think I would have been nervous last year. But having this year, having beaten some big powerhouse teams like Michigan State, and again, routing Stanford, albeit they weren't as good this year, but I think Oregon has proven that they can go against some solid big defenses. And so I'm not as nervous, but I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it could be, it's going to be a tough game for sure. The other factor is that Oregon offensive line is still pretty banged up. I mean, we have most of our good guys back in the line, but there's a couple, like our center's been out, and we're not sure if he's going to be back yet for the playoffs. And so that makes me kind of worried about how we would match up against Alabama's defense. But I mean, if we could hold them enough, Mariota, I mean, is outstanding, as most people have seen, you know, getting out and, you know, even if the line breaks down, he can just sort of create plays out of nowhere. So I think they'll have a tough time stopping our offense, honestly. And in terms of our Oregon's defense going against Alabama, could be rough. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't watched Alabama enough this year. I mean, kind of get glimpses here and there, but I'll have to go back and watch some recorded games to really have a good opinion if we get there. But I think it's going to be a good matchup, I guess, I would say. But
I have a question for
Mariota.
Well, now I have a question for all three of you guys. So, and you guys can all, you know, maybe take turns answering the question, or, you know, maybe whomever has the best answer. One of the topics of conversation that I've been hearing on, you know, on ESPN and on other talk sports radio shows with regards to this whole college system was the issue of travel. Now, the fact that because they're traveling to these different locations to play these games, that technically there's no quote-unquote real home field advantage for any of the teams. However, with Florida State playing Oregon and Pasadena in the Rose Bowl versus Alabama and Ohio State playing in New Orleans, where they're literally, those, you know, number one and number four are literally just going linear, you know, they're literally just going north to south. There's not much travel issue. Does that make a difference, do you guys think, in terms of how they schedule these games and how they rank players in terms of their ability for fans to travel as well? And Eric, I'm actually going to start with you this time, if you can kind of give your feedback on that question in terms of if this is a factor in terms of the games and how this impacts the ranking system. And then we'll go from Eric to Erica, and then we'll have Nicole wrap up my question.
Well, as far as my experience, as far as seeing it in the past, I really haven't seen it would make a huge difference as far as where they play the games. I know they try to make the sites as neutral as possible, but it seems like each team has, you know, a fairly decent amount of their own fans in the stadium. And, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, boosters being able to pay for, you know, fans to go or students to go or what have you, but it seems like each team is represented well. I haven't seen anybody have a real, you know, decided home field advantage due to that. So, yeah, I haven't really seen it affect things that much.
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as the travel, I think it's, you know, because the Rose Bowl, the Oregon and Florida State are playing in the Rose Bowl, which is always played in Pasadena, and then the Sugar Bowl is always played in New Orleans. So those two matchups were kind of set before they even knew who was going to be in them. So, you know, it was kind of just dependent on who ended up, you know, in their respective spots for those bowls. And so, but I think, you know, obviously Pasadena is less travel for Oregon than it is for Florida State. But they, you know, Florida State will travel, you know, with plenty of time for them to get used to time change and to get used to the stadium and things like that. I think that it'll turn out to be fair for everybody. And it's, you know, Florida State, obviously their fans are going to have more of travel time if, you know, if they're coming right from Florida. But like Eric said, the fans are so all over the place now in around the country that I think that it will be pretty fairly balanced. And there's going to be people there that are not fans of either team. They're just going to want to be at those bowl games, and they have excess money, so they buy tickets. So that's another aspect of it, you know, that of the game that will kind of even it out.
Yeah, I
know.
As far as my understanding is that I don't think the committee really can consider that, not to say that they don't without saying it, but I don't know that that's part of the criteria. You know, I don't think they think, oh, well, this would be a better matchup because there'll be more players. I think they really have to rank them in terms of their body of work and let the chips fall where they may. And I also believe that the playoff locations will rotate every year. Is that right, Erica?
I
think they rotate.
Heard that, but it's probably right.
I don't know that they're set in the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl every year. I mean, there's always going to be a Rose Bowl and always going to be a Sugar Bowl, but in terms of for the playoffs, I don't know that they're in those set locations every time. But I will say that the Florida State coach, Jimbo Fisher, this afternoon on the call, was asked about that and kind of about how his team felt about that, because clearly they're out of the four teams that are going to be the one with the disadvantage in terms of, you know, the likelihood of having equal amount of fans. And he didn't really seem too concerned about it. I mean, obviously, you know, they say all the right things half the time, but he said his biggest thing, they actually were pretty excited to go to the Rose Bowl just because in, you know, previous systems, they haven't really had that opportunity because usually it's, you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 schools that go into that. So, the Big Ten. I always mess that up, Big Ten itself.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they were actually
like
looking forward to
schools in the conference.
I know. But, yeah, so he said they're actually looking forward to it. And actually we are in Oregon, we are too, because I do think it will be lopsided. I can't imagine as many Florida State fans coming out, but I may be wrong. So I know that most, you know, in our sort of fan world, I'm seeing tons of discussion about people caravanning down. It's still about a 16-hour drive, but people are willing to make it for sure, definitely for this matchup.
Well, I know.
I have
thinking
another question
about it just in terms of money, though, you know, in terms of the monetary factor, not just in terms of which teams travel better, you know, which impacts, I think, rating and things like that. But, you know, again, I'm personally excited. I think this is going to be a good matchup. I think that I really am looking forward to seeing Florida State come and play on a West Coast team and see what they can do against each other and how well they match up. And I think you're right, a lot of people really do want Oregon and Alabama to play. But I think there's also a really large contingency, too, that wants to see what Ohio can do because, you know, having been a past national champion and saying, you know, do they have what it takes to get back to that number one spot? So I think that they have some good teams in the lineup, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. I know we're going close to 8 o'clock, and I know that Erica's got one more question, and then we have to find out from Nicole and get some information from her, you know, to tell the listeners a little bit more about her site and what Gridiron Girl is. So, Erica, go ahead and ask your question, and then we'll let Nicole tell the listeners a little bit more about her site and, you know, how people can get in contact with her. So, Erica, go ahead.
So, obviously, being you've talked to Mariota before, talked to Helfrich and that. So we know that, you know, Mariota has another year of athletic eligibility left, right, after this year. He still has one left.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that, and I know he doesn't really care about the Heisman. That's just not really the type of, I mean, it would be nice if he won it, but I know that's not like a make or break thing for him. But do you think that if Oregon doesn't win the national championship this year, do you think Mariota comes back for another year to try and make another go at it?
Oh, that's a tough one. So here's the deal with Marcus. He will, I mean, if anyone's paid attention to him, he will not ever, I mean, he completely shies away from any personal accolades, always. And the only way to really get him to open up and to smile and to talk is to talk about his teammates or his family or, you know, basically other people. Like, he's completely genuine like that. And so I don't know so much that he doesn't care about the Heisman, even though that's what he'll say. But after, I will tell you that after the, well, just before the Pac-12 title game, he talked about, he finally did sort of open up about the Heisman and did admit that it was, it, you know, something that he had dreamt about. So I think it was more that he didn't want it to be a distraction and didn't want, he doesn't want it more than he wants, you know, the Pac-12 title or the national championship. So I think if he gets it, I think he'll go having won the Pac-12 title. Now, if we didn't win the Pac-12 title, he may come back. You know, I think it was more that. And, I mean, obviously he's focused on a national championship, but I don't know that he'd come back having won sort of two of the three things, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I think, and I mean, the other thing too is I think a national title is more important to him than the Heisman, but I don't know that he would come back just for the national title, having won the Pac-12 title and the Heisman. You know, I just don't see that happening. Given and then here's the other big factor: he's already got his degree. There's already an insurance policy out. He's taking yoga and golf, I mean, which he got criticized for, but the reality is he had already completed all of his coursework. So, you know, he came back. He's been pretty clear about the fact that he came back specifically to finish his degree, because at the time he had to make that decision, he wasn't done with his degree. And that was something that has, you know, was really important to his family and to him. So that was what he said, all he has said over and over, is that's why he came back. Now that that's done, and probably winning the Heisman and getting the Pac-12 title, I think he's gone. I just don't really see a reason he'd come back, honestly.
Okay.
I think it would be too much of a risk for what would, you know, for the outside chance of making it to the Pac-12 or to the national title again. So.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Well, thank you. That was actually really insightful. I'm actually, again, I'm so glad for the opportunity to talk college football, because clearly, you know, it's something that is very near and dear to a lot of individuals. Of course, as you guys know, my heart is in the SWAC, so the Southwestern Athletic Conference, you know, is a proud alumni of Mississippi Valley State University. And, of course, you know, we're primarily known for the late, great Deacon Jones and the incomparable Jerry Rice. But you know, again, yes, Jerry Rice is an alumni of Mississippi Valley State University, so we are definitely proud. At Valley, he was number 80. Of course, you guys know him as number 80. You know, at Valley, he's 88. You guys know him as number 80. But, you know, again, I'll be honest, that's part of the, you know, my thing with the college, is that, you know, I follow, you know, my college. So, but at the same time, again, we still have to keep up with what's going on in the college scene, and I always have to be ready so when draft time comes, I know who my fabulous Cowboys, you know, are going to be looking at, who do we need, you know, who's going to give us the protection that we need, whether it's on offense or defense, and fill those gaps. So, you know, these conversations are very, very valuable to me. So that's going to be my last question for you, Erica. I'm sorry, Nicole, before we go on ahead and get some information about Gridiron Girls and, you know, what your website does and your Twitter handle, and so people can find out what you guys are doing. Do you have a favorite professional football team?
You know, Erica and I always talk about this. But honestly, I follow certain ones now based on where Oregon players have gone. So obviously I'm pretty, you know, biased. But And for sure, there's no question wherever Marcus Mariota goes will become my new favorite team. So I've heard this morning, actually, some rumbling about the Cowboys possibly wanting to trade up for him. I don't know if that would be the case, but I would be ecstatic for that, mainly because he's told me before that's his favorite team. I don't know that
good
he's
man.
Sort of announced
that
anymore.
I think I like him already.
Yeah, I was talking to him about video games or something one day and asked him which team he plays, and, you know, when they're playing NCAA or I don't remember, something silly, and he just kind of came out with it. So, I mean, that's the other thing is the if we make it to the title game, it'll be played in, you know, Jerry Jones territory, and I hope that he gets a chance to see him and consider him because, I mean, it'd be great to see a good guy like that go where he'd probably want to go. So,
well, he's clearly a smart young man. He went back and finished his degree, which is beyond fabulous. Of course, that's the whole reason why they are called student athletes. And now he wants to go to the Cowboys. What more could a girl ask? Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
But, I'm just sort of speculating. He hasn't said specifically he'd be down to say where he wanted to go, obviously, but, you know, at this stage. But I do know that that's his favorite team. So we'll hook for that.
Well, definitely. Well, so speaking of Gridiron Girls, I mean, we have done a lot of talking today about college football, but we have not given you an opportunity to tell us what is Gridiron Girls.
Yeah, Gridiron Girls. Well, we started a few years back. I had been teaching just sort of through a series of events, had been teaching football 101 classes for women with some of the former docs here and some current well, I guess they're all former now, but basically with some of the Duck football players. And I just thought it might be fun to start a blog, you know, just to kind of have a voice in the mix of all these guys that I was talking about football with. And it just kind of evolved, and I thought, well, maybe there are other girls like me out there that would want to write about their own team. And so that's how we were born. And, you know, we set out to kind of be sort of an inspiration or to inspire women that weren't necessarily into football, but to inspire them to get into it. And mainly just because I would see all my friends, you know, in Eugene and around here, I mean, everything that surrounds the Ducks. And I thought, well, there's a lot of women out there that say, oh, I'm a Duck fan, or, oh, you know, I like to watch the games, but they didn't really understand what was going on. But, you know, that was kind of what I was getting from my friends. And so I thought, well, maybe I can start by writing in a way that will get them interested in watching. And so that's where we started. And I thought, well, we could keep our content, you know, pretty touchy-feely and just talk about, you know, interview players and, you know, about things maybe not really related to football so that people could get to know them, because I think women tend to be more relational. So that's kind of what we set out to do. And then also to have other content that would cater to, like, you know, the party throwers and that sort of thing. So we'd have rescues and we'd have fashion, we'd have different things like that to kind of cater to the female fan base. But we sort of evolved, and as Erica has probably talked about, we've sort of evolved over the past couple of years, and it appears that we have more men but in our audience. And so at this point, we're sort of tailoring our content to be more, you know, more football centered but with a feminine touch. So we'll talk, we don't simplify it as much as we used to. You know, we'll just basically break down the game or break down interviews in a football center way, but just kind of with a feminine touch, if that makes sense. So, for
no,
example,
it actually makes a lot of sense. No, it makes
so
a lot
for
of
example,
sense.
Right. I mean, I figured if we can get people to be interested in the players, then it's easier, at least from my point of view, for women especially. It turns out it's same for men too, but if you can get them sort of interested in the player themselves, then it makes it more interesting to watch, and then the more you watch, the more you learn, and, you know, it's a domino effect. So
that's actually how I got my Twitter handle, so that's why I'm laughing. I definitely understand. I used to write for a female site, you know, with a similar lean, but I think you guys are primarily college though, whereas Sideline Pass covers a little bit of both, but they're more professional. And one of the things I used to write was a weekly column called Kishi's Cuties. And that, I mean, was actually called the Sideline Pass Cutie of the Week, But because my name is Kishi, you know, the tie-in was, oh, Kishi and Cuties, and, you know, but, you know, and that's how I got my Twitter handle. But, you know, the Sideline Pass Cutie of the Week did that. It talked about the players while giving the female something else to look at, you know, and being able to include the stats and the bio as well as the visual so that, you know, I had a lot of fans say, oh, wow, I looked at the game and I knew who that person was now, you know, because they weren't just a name to them. They now knew something and they could contribute to the conversation. So, no, I totally get it. Well, one more quick question, and then because we have to talk about what's happening around the league and also around the international game. Where can people find you, and what other really cool stats and information do people need to know about what you guys are doing this season?
Yeah. Well, you can find me at UO Gridiron Girl on Twitter, of course, and then you can find our main site Twitter handle at gridirongirl.org, and you can also contact us via the website through the contact portion, which is easy to find. But yeah, I mean, obviously the season's somewhat coming to a close. I mean, well, obviously we have a lot of bowl games to get to, but by far our biggest discussion is going to be between Alabama and Oregon as we move forward, just because those were our, you know, we have, I write for Oregon, and then of course we have Tracy that writes for Alabama. And so there'll be a lot of good banter going back and forth, especially if we end up in that kind of a matchup. So, I mean, you can look for continued interviews. Right now, our main access is with Oregon, and, you know, the Oregon media department has really been helpful in trying to get us access at other colleges, and from there we hope to expand more into the NFL market. But at this point, you know, our content is pretty heavily Oregon, Alabama, and then of course Erica does an amazing job covering all the NFL stuff for us. But yeah, you can, as we move into next season, for sure you'll be we'll be having a lot more videos and of course a lot more interviews with players and coaches. And obviously, always look for her fun game day recipes and different craft ideas. We've got to throw in the girly stuff once in a while.
All right, wonderful. Well, thank you. Before we let you go, Eric, do you have any final questions for Nicole?
No, I think we pretty much covered all the bases, so I'm pretty well, you know, pretty well filled in.
Okay, great, Erica.
No questions, but I just have to reiterate that, Nicole, friends don't let friends be Jets fans. So if Mariota goes to the Jets, you can't be a Jets fan, okay? So there you go.
Oh, well, Erica knows. We have a little ongoing discussion about Mark Sanchez, because he's kind of my celebrity crush a little bit. And so even when he was terrible with the Jets, I just had to watch him anyway. But I actually am really happy that he's now with Chip Kelly for obvious reasons.
Well, see, and unfortunately for me, I'm unhappy that he is with Chip Kelly for obvious reasons. Because, you know, I don't blame you on the celebrity crush thing. You know, he's definitely crush worthy, and now I'm crushed because he's with the Eagles. But no, thank you so much. But thank you again, Nicole, so much for joining us. We really appreciate having you on our No Joke Football Huddle, sponsored by Zazzle. So before the show ends, let's hurry up and get into the women's scenes and get the updates on the NFL game day chatter, because we have a big game coming tonight. We have to hurry up and make sure we get Erica to her TV in time to see her fabulous Patriots. So again, remember to keep up with the women's scene every week. Go to our timeline, Gridiron Beauty on Twitter and on Facebook for the latest updates. So we are going to go over to Australia in Gridiron Victoria at Gridiron Vic on Twitter, and you can follow them weekly using the hashtag GVWomen for game day updates. The champs, the Western Fox undefeated, are getting ready for TGI Friday Vic Bowl 2014 on December the 14th. Don't forget that date is December the 14th. It is the TGI Friday's Vic Bowl, and the Foxes will face the site host, the Berwick Diamonds, who finished second overall for the season. The Foxes are looking to get back-to-back titles, having won the inaugural title in 2013. Berwick Diamond's first-year squad are the underdogs coming in versus the champs. So we will see if there is an upset on the horizon. Ooh, it's going to be interesting down under. So get more details about the Vic Bowl 2014 and yet other events that are planned, again, by visiting gridironvictoria.com.au. And in Gridiron News South Wales, the champions at Phoenix Gridiron will not return to defend their 2013 crown. It will be the Newcastle Cobras versus the UTS Gridiron for the Opal Bowl final. And that's also going to be held December the 14th, 2014. So for more information on that, you can visit at GridironSW on Twitter or visit their website at gridironsw.org.au for final updates and other events that are planned for South Wales. And in Mexico, FXF, I'm going to get that right. It's a fabulous tongue twister. But in Mexico, FXF, I'm just going to keep it moving. Mexico gears up this weekend with all three division finals. Visit our Facebook page for final updates and MVP nominees. Again, follow FXF on Twitter at FXX_Mexico and at Facebook FXF. Female Extreme Football Final Squads are Extraordinary Division Ravens versus the Vaqueras, which is Cowgirls. And the Fuerta Strong Division, Mirmiadans versus the All-Stars, plus the Bellas, Beauty, of course. Division features the Dragoness, the Dragons, versus Panteras Negras, the Black Panthers. So thanks again to Terra.com MX for their photo shots with the finals of the FXF key players. And check out our timeline again for the cool link to the shot by the talented Maria Castillo of Terra. And also you can follow at BAFA Women, that's BAFA Women, for the final results of the Opal Series from Great Britain. Congrats go to the Coventry Cougars on winning their second national title. And to runner-up Manchester Titans women and the T Steelers, finishing second and third. And we're going to finish what's going on with the female ladies' leagues around the world. And we are headed to beautiful Spain for the fifth Spain Cup tournament to launch for the 2014-15 season, plus a new 5x5 women's challenge tournament for squads that cannot field a full 11-man squad. Barbaras Rookies, the four-time Cup Spain champions, are the favorites. So follow at FEFA_Spain on Twitter for the updates from Pinto, Spain. Let's see, the finals for the event is Monday, so we should have the results by next week. And again, check out our timeline for team pictures and for the tournament. Now follow us as we gear up for the North American season, and that is coming to you in the spring 2015. Trial update information for that, go to our network circles by following at GIQ Queendom and Miss Gridiron 9, at Backseat Coach, and at WFB Talk. Again, to get more information about the tryouts and the upcoming female season, go to GIQueendom, or at Miss Gridiron 9, or at Backseat Coach, and lastly at WFB Talk. Reminder, tryouts for the Women's Gridiron in North America for 2015 are on now. Do you have what it takes to make a roster in your area? And that's it in the women's news. Again, follow us for the latest on Twitter at Gridiron Beauties or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gridiron Beauties. All right, ladies and gentlemen,
hey,
it's time to talk about NFL. Uh-huh.
Are you on, Oscar?
Yes, I am. What's going on, guys?
Hi, we have Oscar! Awesome!
I wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas because I'm probably not going to be able to be available within that month then, but I wanted to wish everybody happy holidays and doing a great job with the show. I appreciate everybody's efforts. I really, from the bottom of my heart, and I know you guys are, you know, in the mix, and NFL today, and how about them Raiders spanking the Niners, huh?
Man,
that
was crazy.
Shutout? How about the shutout by your Rams?
Yeah, I know. It's surprising the last 2 weeks. And, you know, the 52 burger, that was awesome. That was, like, totally surprised. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think they were going to be able to do that. But surprising how the Raiders go, they get burned out 52-0, and then it's just that rivalry itch. They just wanted to come out and play good against their Bay Area rival.
So now you didn't come out here to D.C. to watch the Rams play, did you?
What was that again, Tishy?
Did you make it out here to D.C. to watch the Rams play?
No, I was just happy the last 2 weeks that our defense has stepped up and they've done a good job offensively as well. So I was kind of just happy. But I mean, a 52-0 win against the Raiders, I don't know, it doesn't say much for us. I think it's just, you know, today's game I think was a little bit more competitive.
Well, good, because if you were out here in D.C. and I didn't get to connect, we were going to be in trouble.
No, I wouldn't do that to you. I don't hate the Redskins as much as I hate the Niners, so.
I totally understand. Well, no, I'm so glad again for your Rams. That was awesome. And I guess I'm not allowed to say anything about Thursday's game, so we'll just skip on to tonight's game.
Poor Eric.
I know.
See, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. Eric, I didn't say anything. See, it wasn't me.
Well, see, you did mention Thursday, so technically you did say something. But that's okay. I'll let it pass.
That's a little stinger there, huh, Eric? A little sting?
Yes. Well, I mean, overall, it's been a tough year. But I did hear word today that they are planning to part ways with Mel Tucker, the defensive coordinator, at the end of the year. So that kind of makes me happy. So looks like some changes are coming. So I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Well, we just hope that
I know for a fact, from what I read, you know, to your point in the previous couple weeks, there's a lot of personnel changes that have to be made there. There's a lot of talent on that team, and just somehow they're not up to the potential, but they've had injuries as well, so it's kind of a big factor.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the past few years injuries have played a major part, but, I mean, that tells you that somewhere along the line they're not evaluating talent properly in the, you know, number twos and number threes. I mean, it's easy to pick, you know, the star quarterback or the star receiver, but, you know, this time of the year some of those backups have to start stepping up and you have to be able to evaluate that talent. And, you know, so far it doesn't seem like they have that capability for some reason.
And that's going to be even more critical with Brandon Marshall being out for the season, which, oh, my gracious, I'm really and truly hoping that he gets healthy and wishing him a speedy recovery.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a big blow.
Yeah, that one hurt.
Well, I got an alert that they're experiencing buyer's remorse on Cutler's contract, so, which I wouldn't blame them, so.
And since you're a big fan of him, of course that's depressing news.
Oh, yeah, I was so sad to hear that he could potentially fade away into obscurity somewhere like he deserves to. So I would be happy the day I never have to hear about Jay Cutler again or watch his whiny face on TV. That's all I have to say on that subject.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Eric agrees. They haven't had a pedigree of quarterbacks ever, so this one's no different.
I know. Well, they need to get smart and go to the draft and find somebody they can really build a team around. That deal that they made with Denver to get Cutler wasn't the best thing. And I really think that they need to find their franchise guys and bring in, you know, like Eric said, bring people in that can really evaluate talent and finally, you know, have a team that is full of those people that take a leadership role and can really, you know, start leading again. And I just think that team is a state of just disarray and, you know, flux. There's nobody stepping up, I don't think.
Yeah, and Kishi, in Washington, there's the politics that are a mess, and now we have the drama of RG3, including Daniel Snyder. So, you know, Washington is always a drama area.
See, and that is why I am a diehard Cowboys fan. I learned early. But you know what I will say, and this is probably going to be horrible. I will say this for those RG3 supporters, that today's loss was fabulous because they can't blame this on him now. You know?
You know what? I really think the new coach has done a good job. Unfortunately, you know, the ownership is to blame here because they think the coach is an issue, and in reality, you know, you've talked about it in the previous weeks before. They got no foundation around this kid, so they're basically just throwing him out to the wolves. And until they fix that, you know, he's not going to be relevant at all. He's probably going to be more injury prone than anything.
Well, and the other thing, too, and a friend of mine and I were having a conversation earlier this week, and, you know, and he made a really valid point, is that Jay Gruden has come in here, and they're trying to teach RG3 a West Coast offense, but in all honesty, this isn't his style of play, and in addition to that, he's had very little time to implement it. I mean, yes, you can say there was training, you know, there's off-season and the trainings and the workouts and, you know, and all the practices, but he's really and truly had very limited time to implement it on the field. I mean, the first game of the season, he's out hurt. And then he's out again for, what, 3-4 weeks? And then he plays 2-3 games, and then you yank him. That's not enough time to be able to implement that system and to implement it with the first team because, again, with him having been out with the injury, he's got to build his chemistry back up again with the first team. It's not just about being healthy and doing what it takes to strengthen that leg, but then he's also got to build that chemistry back again because the team was starting to build that chemistry with Colt and with Cousins. So, I mean – 3 different quarterbacks in the same season. How's anybody on the O-line ever going to get their timing and their rhythm together?
You're talking like Alex Smith. You're talking about an Alex Smith situation in San Francisco before he went to Kansas City. It's kind of the same situation. Too many mm-hmm. changes, too many personnel, not enough, like you said, not enough time to dive into a system. And the system makes a quarterback. And if the system is broken, the quarterback is probably going to be very bad. Or it's going to be a bad situation like his where he's more injury prone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So speaking of quarterbacks and systems, and I know that, you know, Oakland won today, but what about all of the talk going on in San Francisco that, you know, Harbaugh may be out. And then, you know, if that's the case, I mean, what's going on with the 49ers, because they seem to be gelling, and this year they just literally seem to be falling apart at the seams.
Eric, you want to take a poke at it?
Well, somebody asked me earlier today about that, as a matter of fact, because I was talking about Mel Tucker, and they were like, well, you know, do you think, you know, Harbaugh would come to Chicago? So, you know, if in the event he does end up leaving, I mean, I would be ecstatic if they could pick him up because, you know, he would have them playing like, you know, the Bears instead of the Care Bears or the Bad News Bears. He brings, you know, a hard-nosed, you know, tough brand to the field, which is what the Bears are historically known for. And, I'd be ecstatic. So I'm not too worried about, you know, what San Francisco does. I really don't care. But, you know, from a fan standpoint. But, you know, if he does end up leaving, I mean, you can definitely be sure he'd be on at least my radar and a lot of other Chicago fans, especially being a former player of the Bears.
Yeah, you hit it on the dot right there. I think he's on the hot seat because of everything that's going on internally, and he hasn't addressed certain things that some people have thought maybe he should have addressed. But the bottom line is he's on the chopping block because they got 3 games left. This is a 4-game season now. If they don't make the playoffs at this point with some help, more than likely he's ousted.
But won't this be the first season that since he's been the coach in San Fran that they would not have made the playoffs?
Yeah, but a lot of it in pro football is really what have you done for me lately? And
right.
Given the fact that he's gotten some personnel issues internally in the locker room, that sometimes will oust the coach. You know, obviously Rex Ryan is immune to that, but reality is reality.
Mm-hmm.
more than likely Harbaugh will probably be abandoned at that point. But, you know, they're stranger things have happened. They might just decide to sit another year. But reality is if he misses the playoffs, Colin Kaepernick hasn't played great. There's issues on offensively. Defensively, they're burned out already. To ask a defense to play 16-game season to bail you out, that's asking a lot.
Right.
And
well,
also,
speaking of a bailout,
his coaching style, he does tend to wear on people after a few years. And you saw that with Stanford. You're seeing it now with San Francisco. So I think he's just one of those guys that's just going to have to move around every few years.
Right, which is interesting looking at the stability that his brother has here in Baltimore.
Yeah, two different personalities there, I think, in reality. You know, the one is more calmer, the other one's a little more aggressive and more vocal.
Right. Well, you know where I think his, where Harbaugh, the 49ers, Harbaugh, would actually be a really interesting fit? I'd be curious to see how he would do with the Panthers, which, speaking of, that 41-10 win over the Saints today, unbelievable. The skirmish afterward, after the Cam Newton touchdown, off the chain. I wasn't sure if I was at a hockey match or a football game, and I'm so embarrassed to say, but it was so awesome. And I know I shouldn't say that, but every now and then, you know what? I just need the players to show some passion because these are two teams that really and truly have been so lackadaisical on the field, have been so blah on the field, and I really and truly have just been waiting to see some form of life out of these two franchises. So while unfortunately it happened in the term, you know, and it being a big brawl, that score today, crazy.
Yeah, Eric's probably experienced that like I have in high school, and reality is, how does Drew Brees just go to sleep and not really show up? And that's very rare. So there's got to be some internal things going on in New Orleans because this is used to be a championship caliber team, and all of a sudden now they're laying down like that, and that just it's horrible. It's a horrible performance.
Right. And that's why I think
a lot of times with go ahead.
And that's what I think really truly led to that fight was that these players are not doing something and they needed to get their frustrations out somehow, and it came out in that fight. But, yeah, there definitely has to be. And I will say this, after Sean Payton was suspended for a year, something hasn't been clicking ever since he came back. And that could be, you know, my imagination, but there literally seems to be something that's misfiring in terms of that chemistry, you know, with that team.
Yeah,
also,
you
also look at the fact that with pro teams, especially with free agency, most of the roster, you know, turns over, you know, every 2-3 years. So, yeah, they've had some great teams in the past 2 years, but a lot of those guys have, you know, either moved on or retired. They'll still have some of the core guys there, but not that many, not enough to really affect what's, you know, what's happening on the field as far as them, you know, being able to turn things around. So I would suspect in the next couple of years they probably would be back to, you know, what we're normally seeing. But I think, you know, free agency and turnover has something to do with that as well as far as what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on a GM to try to patch up and quilt up a team every year, to your point, Eric. And then you have the salary cap restrictions. You have everything that goes into play with it. So, you know, we as fans just look at the performance on the field, but we don't look at the dollar logistics that it takes to come up with, you know, to put something on a productive level. And at this point in New Orleans, to your point, I think has been depleted in a lot of areas, and it's showing now.
Right.
Brady, since the conversation is not about the Patriots, but let's talk about Tom Brady, Belichick. I know you guys are happy. I know you guys are going to be AFC, first run. I just have a feeling that this is New England's year.
Yes, I'm feeling it too. You know, we play the Chargers tonight. The Patriots have not lost two games in a row since September of 2012. They lead the league in the last four games of the season in winning percentage, and Brady leads the league in winning. He's 37-7 or something like that. Anyway, so I feel good about tonight's game. And, you know, first seed, if us and Denver end up with the same record at the end of the year, the tiebreaker will be the game we played against them this year and how we beat them. So I feel pretty good about, you know, going in here to the last month, you know, and coming out with that first seed, mostly because New England is probably one of the best teams in the league at home. And to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs would be crucial for us getting to the Super Bowl. So.
Yeah, but that's a key right there.
Yeah, for sure. I was just going to say about the Saints, too, you guys are saying, is that Jimmy Graham has not been, you know, and he's really been Breeze's go-to guy. He just has not been performing at the caliber he used to, and I think defenses are covering him a lot tougher, and Breeze just isn't able to get him the ball like he used to.
From the highlights that I saw on the game, I think Carolina did a good job of blocking and stalemate, and they put up a lot of pressure. And I think the Saints weren't ready for any of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that, and they also don't have the run game, too, because without the run game, they don't have that opportunity because they lost Darren Sproles. So now, you know, that means that they really don't have anyone else but Jimmy Graham. And then, of course, Reggie Bush, even though people kind of shoo and poo-poo, you know, his contributions to the run game because he would often get injured. But, again, still having Reggie Bush was another option. And so you've lost two really good, solid options on your run game.
Yeah, and the sad part out of all this conversation that we're having is somebody out of that division is going to win it with, like, a 6-win, and that's sad. I don't understand that, but anyways. That's the sad part about it. We're talking about a decimated division where somebody who is 8-8 or under that is going to win the division, which is unbelievable, and that's going to put out somebody at 10-6 somewhere else. So that's,
right.
I guess that's the way it goes.
Well, and considering the fact that this is a division that used to had at least two teams that were playoff contenders, and now it's going to be a whoever, you know, claws their way to the top.
Yeah, it's going to be a toss-up right now as to who wins it.
Plus, once you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. So, I mean, we may very well see one of these teams end up in the Super Bowl, you know, representing the NFC. So that,
ooh,
that in itself would be crazy.
Shudder.
That's what I'm saying, Eric. It's like, wouldn't it be horrible if somebody comes out of the South and actually goes to the championship to represent in the Super Bowl? That's like an 8-8 team going and, you know, going – oh, it just blows your mind. For somebody that's 10-6, like Arizona, that didn't get in, you know, a while back on that example, that's going to be horrible.
Yeah, well, now let's see if they get in now because Arizona's, man, that's crazy over there too. I just don't know.
Rams upset Arizona on Thursday. Let me call it now because we're on a hot streak.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you guys.
Well,
and I wouldn't be surprised if we get our beat down on Thursday, just to let you know.
No, don't you jinx
that.
Well,
that division is, you know, the NFC West now with the 49ers losing and the Seahawks won today. It is crucial for Arizona to finish this strong or that division goodbye, and they already lost to Seattle. So it's looking like Seattle's going to be the you know, kind of the winner in that division. So.
And they just squeaked out a win today over the Chiefs with a 17-14 victory, so that's still not saying much either. It wasn't a decisive win.
Yeah, but you know what? In the West, I think the Hawks are still the favorite. Frisco's got issues on both sides of the ball right now. Kaepernick is not playing to his potential. A bunch of interceptions in the last couple weeks. And to get beat by the Raiders, who apparently got pressed the week before, that says a lot about this team that not being not being dialed. Arizona, are they for real? We talked about it previous week. We will see if they're for real. They got to win out And if they win the division, I'm pretty sure they're going to be in the mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't think they get past the first round, though.
Yeah, I have doubts about that, too.
Now, I definitely, the other division that I want to check out is I definitely want to see how the AFC plays out with the Bengals and the Browns in that division and the Steelers, because that now is turning into a dogfight over there, too. The Steelers have just come alive. We literally thought they were left for dead at the beginning of the season, and now it's like, you know, someone's flipped a switch, and they are just going back to old-school Steelers football.
Yeah, they
quick
came back
the right
today
time
against the Bengals.
Yeah, I think them and getting James Harrison back had a lot to do with that, too, because they were kind of turning into more so like a finesse team. But when he came back, it was like the whole attitude just started to change. So I think that had a big impact on them as well.
And Mike Tomlin is a good coach, and he knows when he's on a slide, and he's not hesitant to make changes. And I think he's made some adjustments, and you can start to see now that those adjustments are working out.
Exactly.
And that's what a lot of coaches still have. And that's when you know the difference between your coaches, when a coach can make the adjustment and they're not afraid to make that adjustment, and they can look at the team and see, you know, what it is that's missing and what's lacking. And you're right, Tomlin is a really good coach.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to give him credit.
Go ahead, Oscar.
No, I said you have to give him credit for sure.
Yeah. Also, it speaks to the ownership, too, because they're allowing him to do what he needs to do versus, you know, having their thumb over him, telling him, okay, you have to do this, you have to do this. They realize he's the expert. They hired him. Now they step back, and then they let him do his thing.
Like a Jerry Jones tells everybody what to do all the time?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, when you're in a coaching situation, you know, the ownership has to, you know, take Washington, for example, you have to step back. You have to allow the personnel to do it. And Mike Tomlin understands when his team went down and they were horrible, he understands, he owns it. He owns it because reality is this: you're not going to be here very long if you don't make the changes. And if you don't make the changes, it's a cutthroat business. You're going to be gone, no matter if you had longevity, you know, and stuff like that. But he knows, and he, like I said, he's a good coach in terms of rebounding.
Okay. Well, Erica, your game is on. Are you watching? That's how we lost her. Oh, my gracious, it's 8:42. Oh my gosh! I'm so sorry.
They forced the three. That's all right. They forced the three and out. So I'm happy the defense is, you know, going to perform better than they did last week against Green Bay.
Yeah,
I know,
don't worry.
You always
have an hour. You always have an hour and a half, so you're good.
Okay, good. Because I was like, oh no, Erica, your game. But this has just been such a great conversation. I love talking with you guys. And, of course, yay, we're so happy to have you here, Oscar.
Yeah, I'm happy to be available. Unfortunately, it's not working out to where I can be more available, but you guys are doing a great job. And like I said before, I really appreciate everybody's efforts. And I hope everybody has a good holiday. So if I don't chime in between now and the end of January, New Year's, happy New Year's to everybody as well. And I really appreciate you guys helping me out with growing the brand. And obviously helping out supporting the project that we got going on. So,
well,
yeah, you have
you
a good holiday too.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Yeah, we're going to have tamales on this side of the coast. So, unfortunately, there's usually not enough to ship out because they're gone.
Man, I sure was going to ask for some.
Seriously.
Oh, my gosh. I love fresh tamales. Made and wrapped in the corn. Oh. There was a stand when I was in college, and we would drive 45 minutes to go to this little, shack just to get fresh tamales.
Yeah, Yeah, my mom is that type of person. She does it every year for Thanksgiving and then for Christmas. So those are the two things. She doesn't do anything American tradition, so it's like all Mexican related. So tamales are the 2 months, you know, November and December.
Okay, tell your mom she needs to make an extra batch just for us.
I'll see what I can work out for you guys.
Yay. Well, since you're here, can you go ahead and give us and let everybody else know what's the final updates with regards to, you know, what's happening in the women's leagues and as well as the big events happening in February? Because I know I tried to talk about them a little bit, but I really kept getting tripped up with FXF Mexico. Now I can say it correctly.
Yeah, what's going on right now is in the North American USA football has basically taken responsibility to create a women's gridiron section. They used to have they have the traditional senior group that obviously goes to the NFL level, and then you also have the traditional junior under 17, under 19 squad, and now they're building that for the women's game. So they're hoping that within the next couple of years they'll work that out. But in the meantime, what they're doing is they're doing some tournament games to gather a lot of players internationally to come over and get taught by USA football coaches incorporated with the NCAA and NFL. So that's where the World Games 2 are going to happen in February, and that's what the tournament's about. It's a kind of like round-robin event for in an international field.
Hold on, Oscar, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Whoever's got the TV on in the back, it's a little bit loud and we kind of can't hear. Can you guys mute the TV just for a second?
Yeah,
that was me, sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay, hon.
Erica is very excited for Tom Brady being on the field. Can you tell?
I know. No, I know. That's why I don't blame her. That's why we're going to have to hurry up and let her go. But I definitely wanted to make sure that Oscar was able to get that last bit out again. And then we'll go ahead and we'll wrap up and we will let Erica hurry up and get to her Patriots. Oh, that was a nice
We can play teacher right now. We can just dismiss her now and have her be a happy camper.
Erica, thank you. Well, see, she's kind of running the boards for us, though, so that's why she's kind of staying. So we're going to go. So, Oscar, if you can go ahead and say it again, and then we'll let Erica go because she's actually running the board, so we want to make sure that we're able to stay on the line. But if you could wrap it up for us and close us out for the evening and, again, let everybody know what's happening again in February.
Yeah, no problem. Well, like I said before, the World Women's Game, sponsored by USA Football, and they're trying to branch it out to where they can create an under 17, under 19 type of tournaments for interested women. It's not going to happen soon, but it will happen eventually. So now that what they're doing is this is the second go-around. Last year they had the World Games as well, and this is the second go-around. So they're going to bring international teams from participating players that want to participate from different leagues, or, you know, from the UK, Germany, Spain, and then they're going to match up with the North American ladies that are playing in Mexico and Canada and in the U.S. And at the same time, we're having, you know, the playoffs in the North American swing in Mexico as well, and then the tryouts are going to be coming in 2015, as we had mentioned, you know, previous weeks. Tryouts are going on for the United States and Canada swing, so anybody interested, they can go and follow our timeline, and they can get information on that, and we usually post frequently there. Other than that, I mean, it's going to be a pretty exciting spring. Normally it's very exciting for the U.S., and then we get a lot of players on that we can interview. And the WFA and the IWFL being the two major leagues in the United States, as well as the three new leagues in Canada, which is the WWCFL, the CCWCFL, which kicks off in spring, and the Maritime, the NWFL football up in New Brunswick. But other than that, you know, the women's scene is growing. Australia just finished up. We're going to be heading to Spain next. And then we'll be venturing into, I believe, Germany. And then we'll head to Italy. And so 24/7, that's what it is. And we cover it. So you guys are going to be updating that pretty much as we go. So that's exciting. It's never ending. There's no season ends for women's gridiron because we cover it all. So it's summer in Australia right now. It's winter in the States, and all of a sudden it's going to be winter in Australia, and then we got to cover the spring in the States. So it's exciting. The other thing we're having on, we have the contest that you guys probably mentioned, but we'll mention it again. On Instagram, you guys can win a Notre Dame football leggings. Any player, lady, or anybody that wants to participate, go to Instagram, hashtag Gridiron Beauties, and use that tag, and then with a gym selfie or a workout, however you want to do it, and we will pick out a winner at the end of the month on December 20th. Thanks to Zazzle for supporting us and always helping us out. And at the same time, thanks to everybody that's following us on Twitter and on Facebook and sharing our posts. So that pretty much wraps it up. I was glad to chime in. I just wanted to make sure that I get my personal greetings to you guys for the holidays and give you my thanks for supporting and keeping it going for us and making the awareness that women's gridiron is available and that girls do play no-joke football.
Absolutely, Sid. And it'll be no joke when we get to travel to cover some of these games.
Yeah, that's a wish, and we're working on it on a goal.
Yeah, I don't mind covering Italy. It's a sacrifice that I'm willing to make.
And I would too, by the way, just to let you know.
All right, we'll get ready to go. Well, again, thanks everyone for joining us today on the No Joke Football Huddle. Thanks again to my awesome, wonderful, fabulous co-hosts, Eric Brown and Erica Lynn Anderson, and I am again in Kishi Free. You can follow me on Twitter at Kishi's Cuties. That's KESHISCUTIES. And Erica at Pat Fangirl 12. And Eric Brown at Fit for Life. That's life with a Y. Again, thanks everyone for joining us. And of course, thank you again so much to Oscar for coming out this evening. And that's a wrap, everyone. We'll see you again next week.
Have a happy Sunday, everybody.
Happy holidays.
You too. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.